Yeah, it feels weird to say as a lit RPG author, but I think if you can actually take out like as much of the system as you can, then you should. Like, you should have exactly as much as you require to do what you need and to be awesome.
Yeah, it's something it took me a long time to realize it, but yeah, if you can simplify your system as much as possible, keeping it
keeping rule the based
and functional and fun.
Yeah.
But don't overcomplicate it.
As the author of Extremely Complex Magic Systems, I endorse your message.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that regularly invites authors who should be writing, but would rather progress another podcast. With me today are Ravensdagger, John Beers, and Shirtalone. So how are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
we were talking. I'm caffeinated.
So we have three people sitting in bright sunlight and one person sitting in darkness, which is
just time zones. Ravens, you know?
Ravens are nocturnal, are they?
I don't think so. No, not as far as I'm aware. This one is, but the average one, no. Hey.
All right. So. What has brought us to this point is a lot of circumstance, but we basically, a month ago, I had a bunch of guys over and we discussed questions and we talked about beginning stories. And we thought, hey, what could be cool? Questions about how to build a system. And I asked the guys I thought could be the most interesting in answering this question. And we're going to have a very nice talk today about how to build a system. Now, let me just get this right. Let me just share the screen here so everyone can kind of like also see this, what we're seeing each other. There you go. So first off, how do you keep track of your system? Please help me.
Oh boy.
In my head.
Yeah. Oh. mostly in my head.
Oh.
I mean, I do have a lot of notes, but
oh no. I can actually answer like the broad range on this one because some stories, especially my earlier ones like Stray Cat Shot, Cinnamon Bun, like the first like big lit RPGs I wrote, basically no notes, just going for it. And at the end of like a document, I just have like this is the character's current level and like experience and stats and whatever, and that's it. Now when I write a lit RPG and I've like backtracked on some of the other ones, now I keep like insanely detailed notes, like at this chapter this skill went up by this amount, and on that chapter this skill changed to that on this like chronologically, and then another page will just be like current stats with like information of like how to interpret them, because I've run into so many issues so often over the years where it's like, hey, I can't remember when this character got this skill or if this character still has this one specific thing because I wrote that a year and a half ago and it's only coming up now, and I have to go search through like 7 volumes of a story to see where exactly this one change happened and what it is exactly.
That sounds horrifyingly familiar.
Yeah, no, it's such a waste of time too. You're sitting down to write, you get to a certain point in the story, you're like, oh yeah, the character's going to use this skill, it makes sense. And you're like, wait, do they still have this skill, or did I evolve it, or did I change it, or did they get rid of it, or damn. And then you're looking for a negative, right? Like, if they didn't do it, then there's no thing that says that they changed it. You can easily lose like 10, 20, 15 minutes just searching for that through your entire text. And it becomes like, it's such a loss of time.
I don't want to like put the finger on this, but do you remember that for the first 5 books, Kat had a rocket launcher in her arm?
Yes. Never came up. Never once used the damn thing. It was like, oh yeah, the character has this cool thing. It's neat. Yeah. Never had an in-story reason to use this really cool ability. It just sat there until like book six or so, and it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna get rid of this thing. It's never been useful.
Yeah. When I mean, like at some point, it just got disarmed. So.
Hey. Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, well, we all.
It's
nice
seeing you all. Nice talking to you all. And
it's too much for him, man.
Oh, we haven't even started yet. No, like I cheat. I use the power of corporate greed to my advantage. And basically, I build myself a self-hosted LLM, so large language model, what people call AI. And I, intelligence. And I basically have that go through my entire text, chapter by chapter, and then just give me back all stat increases. And then I put that into like a huge giant file, like annotated with like where everything, like which chapter did what. And then I can A, look through and see if it makes sense. And sometimes it really doesn't, and I have to rewrite entire chapters. But sometimes it does make sense. And I can actually use that basically as like a chronological like summary of when my character did what, got what, and so on and so forth. And then I can put that into a GPT or LLM or whatever you have, like Claude. And ask it like, hey, do I still have the skill? And it goes like, no. And then I have to check if it's lying or not. But mostly it's true. So I like
that's
that.
Clever.
It's fun.
Okay. Yeah. So to be clear, your plan that involves you not doing you any work is step one of 17, build an AI. And step 17 or 17 is see if after all of that, it's lying to me. that's yes. Smooth. Yeah, yeah, that's, it sounds yeah. Sounds effortless.
Like, trust but verify, right?
See, I would go distrust and verify, but
you sound like my
boss.
Think
I have. I think I have an advantage over y'all, in that I'm writing just more straight progression fantasy instead of lit RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Mage Errant, somewhat less so with my upcoming series, but with Mage Errant, you know, I have these, very base level, different types of magic, right? Like elemental magic, like, you know, this person's got stone magic, this person's got hair magic. I get weird with the elements. This person's got chlorine magic, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, as I'm expanding out, like giving them more abilities, I don't have to give them like a bunch of ability names and specific tricks. I can just go, right? They're better with, you know, they're crystal magic. So they have these additional capabilities I didn't give them before, right? Or I just get more creative. I put more creativity and more raw power into it. So it's easier to keep track because it's, you know, the character's progressing is almost like an emergent property of the same base things. Mm-hmm. So I think that helps make it a little easier for me because I don't have to worry about spreadsheets and levels and numbers.
Having written similar styles of stories, it is significantly easier. You don't have to keep track of anything.
Mm. You don't think it'd be easier to give them so like 20 something powers and then add a thing to that power periodically until you've got, you know, so many documents that your whole computer's just going to sag over and die?
That sounds like a very valid
hypothetically.
hypothetically, that almost sounds as good as my AI idea.
Actually, I have found one sheet which has worked exceptionally well for me. And that is getting people to write fanfic of your stories. Well, no, then and at that point they need to organize things. So now there's like a fan wiki, and it's like, this is absolutely perfect. Thank you. Like they're writing this for their own stories and everything, so they keep track of the system and all. And I'm just in their notes and like, yeah, this person takes way better notes than I do. I'm just gonna copy off this guy and all. It's great. It's work.
I just feel so inadequate. Like everyone's pulling power moves, like Raven going over there. Like I write fan stories, shirt with like a sagging computer, with like under the weight of all his documents, and like John Beers pulls out a kitty. Like what the fuck am I supposed to do? Like, but yeah, I mean, this is a really cute cat. Anyway,
here's the one I was telling you about earlier. The potato.
Oh, that one. Oh yeah, the potato cat.
He is not smart.
Potato.
Yeah. So I think we saw him last time, right? When he kind of like jumped over the, jumped over the desk. Okay, cool.
I think so.
I mean,
yeah.
that kind of like answers the question of like, hey, how do you keep track? Which is maybe the worst question to start with. But
yeah.
people asked it the most because I think it's a very prevalent problem.
Yeah. I think go on.
Oh, no, I think the answer is very much different for every person, like because not only to every person's proclivities as a writer, but also to the system that they've built. Mm-hmm. Some need to be kept track of differently than others. But I think, you know, Raven keeping note of what happened and when is an exceptionally good idea for anyone who's looking to do so in the future.
Yeah, yes. But that's like after 4 or 5 years of writing lit RPGs that system has developed. Like it started off as like no notes and just keeping track in my head to like, I'm a serial story writer. So I write like a lot of books, right? So I have like a dozen lit RPGs and I've tried every way of keeping track. And that one there is the most tedious and annoying to work with because you're constantly like getting off your story to go take notes. But it is so, so nice to just be able to go back and be like, oh, yeah, this is what happened on this chapter. And like, this is how the system has changed or whatever. It's just very, very practical.
Are any of you familiar with John McPhee?
No.
No.
He is a just absolutely brilliant nonfiction writer. Publishes in New Yorker a lot, like writes a lot about like geology. Very good. Highly recommend his stuff. But he writes on like a 30-something-year-old computer that can't even handle a mouse. He has like a specialist who comes in. He's like in his 90s now, right? And he has this incredibly elaborate specific, like he's one of like 6 people that still use this specific like type of computer and program or whatever. And that kind of story, I've heard so many stories about writers like this, just who develop ultra-specific ways to write. This is how I write. They're willing to maintain like legacy computer systems or whatever to continue doing it this way. I think this is kind of a thing that just naturally happens with all writers is we build up the way we do things over practice and over time. And eventually those kind of support structures kind of ossify around us until we're entombed in our own writing techniques.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like I switched from Word 2003 2 days ago.
Oh,
oh,
oh, wow.
What'd you switch to?
Welcome.
Just, you know, whatever stupid subscription thing it is. It's just easier with my alpha readers and stuff to let them access things and we're all
I don't think I could move away from GDocs at this point. Like, I'm so ingrained.
I'm in the cult of Scrivener.
Scrivener. Like, I have Scrivener and I automatically back it up to both Dropbox and OneDrive because... You know, recently someone's entire Google Docs account just got like deleted because they were like, you wrote something bad. Like you wrote about killing people. Oh no, like there goes your Google
Docs account.
That
happens all the time.
Yeah. So
Google just lost
local backup.
Google
the
just lost
thing, right?
the $125 million pension fund. They just lost all their data. Thankfully they had a backup with a different cloud service, but Google. No, don't trust them.
I want to go less technological now. I want to get a typewriter and then make someone somehow transcribe that into Royal Road.
Do you like maybe think? Maybe you should maybe think about spending the winter in a hotel.
maybe in Colorado.
Yeah. Nice Colorado.
Oh, I mean like.
Place. Very bit of a maze, but
yeah. All killing and no adventuring makes Jason a dull boy.
Yes, it does, which is why people complain about book 6.
Oh. Hey, look, I love the urban fantasy stuff. I really did. I wanted more of it. I told you, but yeah, maybe we'll get there more. I'm looking forward to it.
Was book 6 the back on Earth or?
No,
yeah.
It was
four, five, and six. Right? Yeah, four, five, and six are all back on Earth, and six was humid as most, you know, sad boy.
Yeah, but it was like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I'm one of those people who like goes on Reddit, like, but actually.
Well, yeah. Some people are just in it for, you know, numbers going up and fun adventures, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. I mean, like, this is what I sign up for too, right?
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on like the promise that the reader expects out of your story.
Yeah.
If they're like, hey, I'm going into this expecting that, and it starts that way, and I'm happy, and then it changes to something else, then you get upset at readers.
And to be fair, not everyone reads Nietzsche. So,
no.
Right? So, yeah. But I mean, like...
I mean, what's the point?
Oh, my God. I feel stared back at. Oh, my God, John, like, you can't do this. We all have ADHD. What are you doing? I mean, I suspect. I don't know. I'm not your doctor. But,
I have ADHD. My God.
Yeah. The cats have ADHD.
I don't know.
So if you're just listening to this and wondering, like, why the heck is Maddox going on his tangent, John just inflicted upon us a kitty playing with a blanket, and we're all staring very intently at it. And, oh, my God, it's so cute. Look at the tiny tail. Oh, my God. Oh, it's making its bed. Aw. Anyway. Sorry. So, yeah. While we were going off on this tangent, we should maybe go back on track. So, actually, let's put this up here to the top, actually. All right. System first or story first?
Depends.
Neither.
Yeah. No. Neither. No. Short story, story first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't sacrifice your system for your story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think the first priority has to be the system has to serve the story. If you start making the story serve the system, then you've written an exposition book.
Mm-hmm.
I think the system has to ultimately be a narrative tool. We're writing stories, we're not making games. But the good thing is we can build a system that is designed to serve the story. But the story has to be the number one priority, I think.
I've started with a cool system before, where it's like, I have a cool idea for a cool system. I like this idea. I think it's original. I'll flesh it out. And then I built the story in consequence of the system.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be a very fun action story, but it wasn't a very good story.
I actually did start designing my system before the story. I had ideas, but, you know, then I was just coming up with a system. And then, you know, it was just a process of refining it. And then once I started bringing in the story, it's like, okay, so this has to change and this has to change and this has to change. Because for me, it always has to serve the story.
Yeah, that's
no,
true.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. I think you kind of have to, if you're going to have like a system that's properly integrated into your world building, you need to have your system relatively, like, at least the bare bones of it relatively early on in your like idea story creation process. Because otherwise you can have like a really cool world and everything, and then you're just jamming a system into it. And it might not function. Like, you want your system to be integrated with the world building. You want like careers and like superstitions and societal things to be linked back into your like your progression system, wherever it may be.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
John.
Yeah.
My philosophy with this is very much, I explicitly set forward to kind of intertwine the story and the system, right? To try to build a system that works for the story I want to tell, but to also give room to change the story to fit the system. You know, I want to explore the themes and ideas of whatever I'm working on, not just through the story itself, but through the very shape of the system, right? You know, one of my, and this is, if you hadn't guessed already, I'm incredibly nerdy about weird shit, but one of the core themes of Mage Errant is about taxonomies and their role in society, you know? And the magic system in Mage Errant, this elemental magic system, very much is, it is just a taxonomy in and of itself, right? It's an elemental magic system of what is an element? Like, how do you do this? In you know, like, just having literally hundreds of elements and having them just be arbitrary and weird and conflicting. And you know, this whole setup was just really a back and forth in the story and the system, you know, pushing them.
And I do believe that the best stories kind of merge all three together, right? I think what really, like, what worked kind of well for me in some stories is you want to integrate all three of these, right? You want to have the system, you want to have the world that the system builds, and then you want to have the characters live in that world, right? So the best stories have all three, right? So, for example, with you, Raven, it is pretty much like the samurai rating, for example, or the way people react to a samurai is very, very closely connected to the system itself, right? Because the system is basically alien semi-gods granting you the ability to buy everything if you just do what they say, which is capitalism critiquing its best.
Yeah, no, that's how Strikash Trust started, was like system first, where it was like, okay, I have an idea for a lit RPG without stats or anything, because I don't like writing that stuff like stats. I was like, okay, I want a lit RPG that's like capitalism dissolved into like a how would you make this a system with nothing but like purchasing stuff. And then I wrote that kind of backwards. I was like, oh, so you need a way to earn these currencies or whatever, and like the world building kind of just happened from there. Making it a cyberpunk story was like a natural offshoot of the system being so capitalism distilled.
And
I think that's actually the crux of it, because I'm not sure system first or story first is a great approach, because I think we all come down on pretty much the point of it should be integrated, because you do a bit of system and then you use that to do a bit of world building, and then you'll see how that explores, you know, interacts with the themes of your story, and then you'll go back and look at the others and what's been changed by what you've done. And so I think doing it integrated is very much the way it goes, because I actually had a system first, but what I ended up with was nothing like where I started.
That's often the case. You iterate before you start, like you try different things, you push it. Yeah.
And then the system also changes while you're writing the story, right? So I very much thought that I would just write a story about an AI in a hover tank and like see how that turned out, right? But the system itself in Torchbearer, I very much pantsed, because I was like, hey, what could be cool, right? How would an AI have a lit RPG system? Right, it would be like, hey, you upgrade yourself with like better CPU, but how are they going to do that if they're in a computer? So I thought, like, hey, maybe they have like magic that can do it. And then I just wrote that for a little while and was like, hey, where the fuck does this magic come from, right? And then I tied it all together to like something else I've written before. But I think that's the way to go through it, to kind of sum it up. You start with either the premise of your story, so the theme or a character or whatever, or the system if you want. Then you kind of ask yourself, well, if this system exists, how would the world look with it, right? Or how would it impact a character? You do that. And then if you have like a character and a system, or a character and or a system in the world, or a character in the world, then how does the third leg of this like three-legged stool, how does that come into existence?
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. This is an approach I haven't used in a long time, since like at some point you just become good enough that you don't necessarily need an acronym to help you anymore.
Okay.
But like when you become practiced enough that like you don't need to really have these crutches anymore.
After the 10th book, or what you might call after like a couple Thursday
million words. Like after a couple million words, your grammar should have improved a little bit, you know what I mean? But there's an acronym I used to use quite a bit when I was starting off. It was MICE, M-I-C-E, which was Meteor, Idea, Character, Event. And I'd build my stories in that order. So world building, then ideas, including your system, then your characters, then your events. And events being your plot outline, basically. That helped a lot initially. Now I know better than to stick to something so rigid. and you kind of figure how to do things your own way and work it out. But it's not a bad idea if you're starting off as a writer to use these kind of like structured ways of doing things.
That's a very rodent idea.
There's this really fantastic essay that Cory Doctorow wrote, basically to paraphrase it. The rules don't exist to tell you what you can't do. The rules exist to tell you what's harder to do.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain?
So it's just like, right, when someone says, you know, don't use adverbs or don't use second person, right? They're not saying this because it's a strict, absolute, you cannot do this in writing rule. Although they might, you know, might have to think of it this way or whatever. They're doing it even if they don't realize it because these things are a lot harder to do, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who use a lot of adverbs and it sounds good. I use a lot of adverbs. I don't know if I would say it sounds good, but there are people who have written brilliant books in second person. You know, Charles Strauss has a duology in second person. Right. And it's very much similar to what Raven was just saying about the starting with these acronyms, starting with these rigid frameworks and then building up from there. Right. These were guides to getting through the hard parts until you were good enough to just wing it in the hard parts.
Yeah, we all started out singing the ABC, right?
Honestly, if you want to grow as a writer, oftentimes you'll start off with these rigid structures. But one of the best ways I've found to grow is to pick one part of these structures that you're familiar with and just break it as hard and like impossibly, like just completely ignore this one solid rule and go on with that and see how you can manage to cope without having that to help you anymore. So you mentioned, for example, don't write in second person, which is a valid thing to say because you're not going to get as many readers. It's harder to write in second person. You should definitely try it though, even if it's just for a short story or something, because it's pushing you to try something new and it's practicing something you're unfamiliar with. And
it's learning from that. I kind of want to like slide into that a little bit. There's in my main job, there's this concept of shuhari, which is taken from, I think, Japanese fighting stuff or Chinese. I'm not quite sure. Please don't sue me about this. So the idea is that first you learn the rule, then you are the rule. First you learn the rule, then you embody the rule, then you are the rule, right? So think of Karate Kid. First off, like the guy just goes like, just paint the fence, right? Like wax the car, wax on, wax off. And he doesn't even know why, and he's just like completely frustrated about it. But then he understands like why he's been doing these things, and at that moment, he's like, "Oh, cool! These rules are actually pretty great." But then at some point, he just does something that is not the rule, but because he knows why the rules exist, that then means that he can break them. If you are just starting out writing, and their first instinct is like, "I'm going to do everything that anyone ever said, and I'm going to do the complete opposite." Mm-hmm. Actually, I was going to say like, hey, don't do that, but actually it might work. Just try it out, right?
No, it's probably going to be awful, but if it's your first thing, it's going to be awful anyway. So you might as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Sure, do you got anything to add?
No, I'm pretty happy with that.
Good. Like whenever you say something like that, it always sounds like you're like rejected.
No, I completely agree. That's the problem with having a bunch of people who are very good on there. And, you know, they'll just say stuff that makes a lot of sense. It's like,
next time, Maddox.
No, they're covered. I'm just going to say.
I just,
chill.
Maddox, invite if one I wander person off towards who's just school, completely just... incompetent, but very loud about it.
Why do you think I'm here? Like, what? Haven't we talked about this?
Someone we can disagree, like, really strongly with, you know?
Yeah. And in general, I think you should write, like, words first, not system first. Anyway.
For TBRCon this year, I was on a panel science fiction and fantasy anime and manga. Mm-hmm. And all the panelists on there were just great, like, real smart. One is a friend of mine who actually works as an animator for an anime studio in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And the other is the author Ada Palmer. And every time one of them spoke, I was just like, I don't deserve to be on this panel. They're so much smarter than me.
Ah, yes. The imposter syndrome strikes again. Yeah. Let me just ask you again. Yeah. Have you ever considered what would happen when people find out you're actually very, very bad at having imposter syndrome? But yeah, like, John just, like, for everyone who's listening, John just died. We just see this empty chair. Yeah. Right. But see, now I'm going to give Travis the chance to outshine all of us. What's the speed spot for power gain rate?
That's based on a whole bunch of different metrics. Mm. Also, why me? I'm kind of famous for like numbers not going up for like 7 months.
Maybe that's
just
sweet spot.
Okay. Like after I asked that, I was like, did I just lead this guy into a trap? But
But no, because like my main character gains a lot of power in that time, but it's not sort of, you know, the numerical numbers go up variety.
Yeah.
I actually think you do a good job of it though. Because from like a reader's perspective, a writer reader's perspective, the reader is still happy to see the like a gain. They're like, oh, your characters are actually gaining. They're becoming stronger. At the end of the day, like, pull out a little bit of the immediate context, and you realize that like, oh, the what they're gaining isn't really much in the grand scheme of things, but they are gaining enough that the readers are happy about it. And that's like, that's really the sweet spot where.
Yeah. Basically, you don't want to have them sitting there going, you know, when's he going to next get the next thing? And it depends. It depends on ultimately how large the scale of your power is. Because if it's sort of, you know, sort of low scale, sort of Batman-y kind of power level, then, you know, it's going to be fairly small gains. But if you're going full on cosmic, everyone turns into a super god cultivation story, then you need those gains to be significant. And then it's just a matter of spacing it out across however many books you're doing. So if you're doing a trilogy, then, yeah, you just need to tower it accordingly. But ultimately, the answer is whatever's narratively satisfying.
Made up term for this, the exploration ratio. So I believe that the best way to think about it is as like a ratio of acquiring power and then exhibiting it in some way. Right. Mm-hmm. And then go in depth, like, with He Who Fights with Monster, the very beginning arc, the very beginning Isekai arc is a masterclass in that, right? Naked Australian man transported to a fantasy world, very few capabilities, really struggling. You know, acquires capability, then has to use this new specific capability to solve problems. Still in over his head, still concussed, right? Acquires new capability, gets new capability. Like, it becomes this almost like video game gameplay loop or a try-fail cycle, where every time there's a new capability, right? Sure, you get, Travis, you give them a chance to, like, see them play, see Jason play out that ability. And even though it's wham, 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 getting him really fast in order, you gave Jason and the audience enough time to see each one played out and used. It was really good, like foreshadowing to completion ratio.
Yeah, there's no point having like a half page list of all the various skills you've accrued if you're only going to be using three of them in the action. It's just a matter of giving them abilities at the rate they're actually going to be useful to them.
Yeah, and it's something you said, John, about video games really brought me back to two things. Like, whether that's a Metroidvania, or a good Metroidvania, or my favorite example of this is the new is the Doom reboot that they did, where they give you the BFG, right? And the very next room is full of monsters and BFG ammo, right? Because they want you to just go ham with this thing, to just see what it can do, to have some fun with it, yeah, sure. To also like, no, maybe this, like, maybe you won't always be using the BFG because it would also be kind of boring. But yeah, you can now annihilate like millions of monsters with one click. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, with regards to like the sweet spots, I think you can easily divide it into like three areas in a story. Mm. So you have the beginning, like John mentioned, like the beginning of Who Fights with Monsters is really, really good at that, where you're gaining powers very quickly. Your rate of gain is rapid, but also as the character is gaining powers, you're explaining how the system works at the same time. They're figuring it out. And this is very entertaining for the reader because like, oh, you're powering up. But in the context of the greater world, the powers that the main character is gaining in that period of the story are generally relatively weaker abilities and stuff. They're cool for the reader because it's new stuff, new information, it's new content. But in the greater scheme of the world that you're in, this is like really minor stuff, but you're gaining it very rapidly to catch up to the general populace or whatever. And I think the second phase is more the, it's the one I like when my stories are stuck in that sweet spot. It's when the characters are a little bit stronger than the average citizen. Like, not necessarily overpoweringly strong. There's still going to be like really, really strong people out there that are like leagues ahead of them. But the characters are at the point where they can actually make a difference in whatever community they're in. They're strong enough to go out and fight the monsters or complete the quest or save the princesses or princes or whatever. They're at that level where they can affect change, and they're still growing in power, but it can be very, very, very slow. It doesn't need to be like a very quick rate of growth, because the entertainment now comes from seeing them applying their slight edge over a long period. And I think the third sweet spot is when your character just becomes that overpowering, extremely powerful, over the top, godlike, or whatever, like whatever is at the top of the power scale. When your character reaches that level and the power gain rate is like basically like the tap is shut, there's no new power to gain. It's just exercising great power to do great things. So I think you have these like three areas in your storytelling cycle that are very fun for the reader. And there's like gaps between them that are kind of hard to traverse. But once you've reached one of those areas, it's like a really nice sweet spot to stay in for as long as you can stretch it out.
Pretty long, as it turns out.
Yes, no. If you're in that middle sweet spot, you can stay in there forever. He Who Fights with Monsters, I think you've been in that sweet spot for like 9 books or whatever, right? Where it's like, yeah, he's stronger than the average, but he's not like overpowering yet. He's not a god or like whatever. And Cinnamon Bun, same thing. It's been in that sweet spot for like 8 volumes now. Yeah. It's a nice space to be.
And like the thing is, you can't have Agon if there's no struggle, right? So Agon being like the Greek word, the old Greek word for like struggle, for basically what makes stories work. That's where the word protagonist and antagonist come from. So if you are like literally a god, and I think it was Zogarth who I talked to about this, and he was like, yeah, at some point like Jake will just like shoot an arrow through the sun and the sun will explode, and he will find a new sun to like shoot arrows through, right? Because you need to have an antagonist, you need to have something to struggle against, because otherwise there's no story. Exception here being like stuff like heretical fishing or Beware of Chicken, right? Where it's very, very cozy, but even there, right? So I'm reading Heretical Fishing right now, it's like, oh no, what are we going to do? Fisher no longer has access to coffee. Oh God, what are we going to do, right? But this is like super, super, super low, like on the stakes level.
Yeah.
But yeah,
one of the best places to look for reason when you reach that peak, when you have the OP badass, right? One of the absolute best places to look for inspiration, I think, for people progression fantasy that RPG authors is actually a Superman. The best Superman stories are not about Superman fighting whatever superpowered jerk, right? The best Superman stories are all about Superman struggling with his own power, about struggling with his role in society when he believes in both, you know, all these really strong moral stances and also just has this much raw power. Like stories like All-Star Superman or Superman Red Sun, right? Yes. It's fun. Yeah. And this becomes a thing. Also, this year switching against at the peak of these stories, I think there's a lot of potential for progression fantasy lit RPG to switch from man versus man or man versus society, or more like man versus self stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I would write a Superman story, it would be about Superman doing his taxes. Because it's such a struggle, right? And it's like, oh, you have to fill out this form and that form, and like, what's your location of birth? Like, there's a drop down menu. There's no Krypton.
Krypton.
You know, it's like, oh, come on! I have to call the IRS, and like, really, you know? Yeah. And then, I recently published this new story where the main character is like unbelievably powerful, right? Like, top of the world, most powerful person around. And it's the complicated love life of evil antagonists, and it's like, they're looking for romance. So it's a romance story and they're super OP, overpowered as hell. But their issue is they're trying to date and space Tinder sucks. So it's like, all right, you know, you're
the premise.
Yeah. That is basically the premise. It's like, you know, they're trying to figure out how dating works and they're very strong and very overpowered, but it's not helping them. You know,
You're
bringing an out of context issue into like the context of someone having a lot of power, and it doesn't necessarily help them, and it makes for very funny scenarios.
With that story, I have one criticism though. Like, there's an insane clown posse, and you still haven't explained how magnets work.
That's true. I haven't actually figured out how magnets work yet. I'll get back to you on that one though.
Fucking magnets, man.
Yeah, I just don't understand them. My brain is too small.
Yeah, just better need like you get a tower to rise up. This entire like sweet spot about like character growth is interesting, I think, because I don't know. I'm thinking about One Punch Man, right? Which is also kind of like what you were talking about, Raven.
Oh,
because the entire plot about One Punch Man is about finding purpose. Right? You are the strongest person. You can kill everyone in one punch. That's the entire thing. So what do you do now? And there's this documentary or like live-acted documentary kind of memoir of the guy who, I forgot which movies he did, but he was like in the National Lampoon. He wrote Board of the Rings, and then later on he died in a either canyoning accident or he killed himself, like no one really knows. Really big comedian. And there's one question in there. It's like, what do you do when you've written the best movie of all time, best comedy movie of all times, and then you've written another best comedy movie of all times, right? Yeah. Where do you go from here? And I think that this is problematic for not just like characters in books, but also, for example, like I don't mean this as a joke, like people like Patrick Rothfuss and George R. R. Martin, right? Who have like this huge acclaim. And then at some point, it's like, hey, like how am I going to write book three, like Doors of Stone, with that much pressure behind me? Like everything I do can just be worse than the first two, because people have like, they have like rose tinted glasses, like the thickness of like Orlando. Like it's, I don't know. We should go to the next question, eh?
Sure thing, eh?
Actually, can we pause for a second? I'm running low on juice. I may need to go plug in my
laptop. Are you gonna go into the jungle and get some oranges and just juice them yourself?
Something like that, yeah. Just be a sec.
I'm really gonna grab a coconut water and a cat.
Coconut water and a cat. All right.
That sounds like a thing.
We're just gonna all abandon Madix.
I'll just.
I'm gonna stay here. You feel like you feel bad leaving you alone.
Thank
you. No, I don't.
Oh,
how are you doing? How's life?
Okay. I have a friend coming over at 5. But yeah, like the thing is, like, I'm doing four full time jobs right now. I'm doing the author thing badly. I've written like one chapter last month and like 3 chapters this month. My biggest problem is that I like my job right now.
That does make it harder to ditch it and, you know, not pay attention to work and do writing on the side instead.
It's kind of very hard to like balance this entire thing. Because like my issue is that it completely fucks my writing schedule, because my writing schedule is I get up, I drink some like protein shake or whatever, and then I type. Talking about my daily schedule. I drink my protein shake, I get up, and I write. But right now, it's like I have all this other shit I have to do. Like, I don't know, like, you know, get the deal done for
Alex. I've been cutting down my writing so much lately because there's so many other projects that have been taking up time. And it's just unbelievable. It's like I need 8 hours, not uninterrupted, but I need 8 hours in a day to get my daily writing done. And if I want to get like any other projects done, like I'm working on a board game right now. That's like an hour a day at least. Mm-hmm. I'm working on like one thing and another thing and the other project and like some side stuff at the same time. And it's like, okay, but these are all things that take hours that I don't have.
Yeah.
So even cutting back, it's like success kind of like shoots you into foot.
Oh God.
I have
more adorable
question.
Creatures.
An orange one this time.
Yeah,
this is
like
Seth.
I have like a closet full of cats.
We have 3. This is Seth. He is perfect and well behaved and the best. He can do no wrong.
right. Anyway, so end of bracket. How much time would you put into your system for 1 books versus 3 and 10? I think this one was from Haylock.
Oh.
Oh no, wait, Sean, I think.
Still that's presuming that you actually spend time actually thinking about that before you start writing. Cuz like is your system necessarily designed to be conducive to ending the story that you're telling? Because like in the sense that like, let's say you're telling a story, and I'm going to use like D&D or like tabletop games as an example. A lot of those will have like a narrative structure to them, right? And it'll be like, if you're writing a shorter campaign thing where you're like, hey, I'm going to go with my friends for like 3 to 5 sessions. It's just going to be one big bad guy, and the story loop is like figuring out where they are, attacking their castle, then fighting the bad guy, whatever. Your characters in that type of story might not necessarily level up a lot, but their system stuff, it doesn't really matter to telling the story. Mm-hmm. It's just there for the sake of being a system, you know? So I don't know necessarily if your system matters so much to storytelling that it would affect the length of your story, unless your system has an end game built into it. Like, I know some systems, when you reach like max level, you become a god or something, right?
Yeah.
And if that's the goal of your character, then yeah, okay, fine. But yeah, I don't know.
Does anyone want to have jump in before I do?
Yeah. Well, I think there is an inherent narrative aspect to story power scaling. So with mine, for example, just when I was building it, I knew that certain levels of power meant certain kinds of stories. Like, you can't have a carriage chase when you're gold rank, because you could just lob a mountain at the other carriage. So I think, power scaling tells you what kind of stories you have. And when I build a system, I tend to build it so it scales up to a certain sort of end game kind of story. And I think yeah, so if you're going to have a trilogy versus 10, 20 books, you need scope in your power scaling. And then it becomes a question of how does it not all go off the rails at book 7?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to... you go first, though, John.
So, kind of two separate things. The first is when I'm designing my system, it becomes less a question of how long is the series and more a question of like what questions am I trying to explore with the system, right? Like what ideas am I integrating in? You know, because I'm all about like integrating magic with my world building, with my story, my themes. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the first questions I ask myself is very deliberately is how does this magic interact with sewer systems? Like that is one of the absolute like first five questions I ask about any setting or whatever is how does the magic interact with sewer systems? How does it interact with water supply? It becomes a thing like, how deep am I trying to explore with this magic, right? In, you know, my standalone epidemiological novel, The Magic of the Rack, the magic was just basically a medical tool for most of the medical communications tool, right? And so I built some very relatively simple basic principles for it. When I need to add a little detail, a little nuance, but it was pretty simple at its core, you know, you get your eye removed, replace it with a gemstone, you can see into the spirit world. With my current series, it is the external complexity is pretty low in turn four. The internal complexity is a lot higher, and the applications are extremely convoluted because I'm exploring like an economic system that's entirely based around this magic system and having like a prayer futures market and all this crazy nonsense, right? And so even though it's only going to be a trilogy, I'm putting a ton of work in developing this magic system because I'm trying to ask so many questions with it. And so it's less length-based, more density-based.
That's a fair point as well, because like if your story is about exploring the system, then you're going to want a more complex system. Whereas if you're just telling a story and there happens to be a system in the background, then your system doesn't need a lot of depth. It just needs to function enough that you can tell the story that you want to tell, and the system was going to be there in order to enable you to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. For a more character-driven author like you, Maddox, the going as far as I do on a system could potentially be really counterproductive, right? Unless that the systems allow you to explore character even further.
I kind of slingshot.
The other kind of thing I want to bring up, this isn't just a, like a little kind of fun trick, is what I call it, like emergent systemic properties. I need a better name. But basically, design your system with just this core functionality mechanic, but give room for fun tidbits to grow off like branches. Like, oh, here's this weird side discipline that's kind of limits the use of the system in some ways, but is really cool for niche applications, or here's a really unique way to think about and use and practice a system that doesn't change it fundamentally, but it's a weird quirk, right? And just letting yourself create like tree branches off your main system like that will allow you to expand it widely as needed for flavor or for plot or for whatever.
He cut off.
I think it froze. Yeah, he froze.
Yeah,
in time.
I think so.
Lost connection there for a second.
So,
his cats were secretly plotting in the background. Their wrath has been unleashed.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you were saying, right? So the whole like leave off branches, and this is kind of how I did my system at start, at least. I just was like, hey, I want to write about a woman who's stuck as an AI, and like everything that she lived for is long gone. Right. So how do I do the system?
You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad, and this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about our friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast.
the second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. Well, 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 it's a new ad. If you are interested in having your story shouted out on this podcast, please reach out to me under critrpg.podcast@gmail.com. But in the meantime, why not check out the old version of my book Torchbearer? You can find it on Royal Road, and there's a link down below. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening and or watching, and I hope you're enjoying the show. I wrote just the idea of like, hey, I have like the system and she can upgrade it, and yeah, she has like magical powers, she can like advance technology, fine, whatever. And then I unfortunately had to think about it. And then then like what John said happened, I kind of had to think about, okay, so why does she have this power? Where does it come from? Where does it go? Cotton Eye Joe, right? So what I loved about this thing was I could just like add stuff. I could just add stuff. Like, would it be cool if she got X? Yes. Would it be cool if she got Y? Yes. But what I've basically ended up with is like two interlocking magical systems. So one is magic, which is what the mage lords have, right? They can do literal magic. They can ride dragons and like have griffins and all this kind of stuff. And then on the other side is the whole like technological aspect. While she was still like in her human form, everything was fine, right? Because you could just make a laser rifle, and it's like basically like a support magic-ish, right? Make a laser rifle for your people, and they shoot at the dragons with laser rifles. Makes sense. But now that she's actually like in a computer and her entire like existence is digital, she can modify herself, which she couldn't do before. Every time she tried, it kind of like hideously mutated everyone he should like put this power onto, right? Because like there's too many concepts in a human body that you just can't think of them all, and they just all like collapse. But now the question is just like, where she go with this, right? And what she can she do with it? And also, now that the entire magic is like everywhere, how has it affected human life, right? So what happens to a society where objects just like randomly advance at technological levels, right? How does this look like? And I'm really looking forward to exploring it. I have some ideas that I want to write about, but this is what I do. I kind of like explore the world together with my character, because that's what's fun to me. Works super well in Torchbearer, doesn't work so well in Band, but we can talk about this later. Because like Band system, I still haven't gotten a handle on. Not even after like 30 chapters.
Honestly, for shorter stories that you're not aiming to go big on, I find that the best thing might be just to not have necessarily a system. Like, if you want magic in your story, just have magic. Like, what they have in like typical magical fantasy stories isn't necessarily like a system-based thing. It's just, it's magic that has like a few rules or whatever, but it's just it's just a magic. I find that works probably a lot better for shorter stories, where you don't necessarily want to spend pages and pages exploring a system.
I think maybe that's just like the Sanderson effect, right? Because we've all been trapezing around this
yeah,
fact.
No,
right?
Yeah. What was his three rules again? Like the more complex a magic system, the more you're allowed to use it to solve complex problems.
Yeah, something like that, right?
Yeah, something to that effect.
The better the reader understands it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The better.
Yeah. Because it's a very good axiom to think about.
It's a good balancing system for that.
A lot depends too on the narrative role of your system, right? Like, I tend to use my, you know, like my non-lit RPG but very crunchy complex magic systems to do things like puzzle fights. Have you guys seen like Hunter Hunter or what's that anime with all the really buff guys? JoJo.
Buffy.
right? They have a lot of puzzle fights where people have these capabilities, and you're figuring out what the gimmick for one of them is, or how one's going to use their weaker powers to beat the stronger character,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Or I often do like envision like applications of magic as like Agatha Christie like mysteries, where it's just like you're using the principles of magic you know to figure out how did someone do this thing or how is someone
I love that. I love all these puzzle fights. I love them to pieces because, like, for me, those are A, fun to write, and B, they're the best fight scenes you can write, right? So because like John Wick 1, super fun because he kills people in like so many fun ways that you haven't even thought about. But in like John Wick 3, it's like dog bites person, John Wick shoots them. Dog bites other person, John Wick shoots them. Like, it just gets repetitive. And I think the best fights are the ones where the characters use the system in ways that they couldn't do before, either because they didn't think about it or the environment wasn't right, or they didn't have the capabilities. And I think this last thing, right, they didn't have the capabilities, that is almost unique to lit RPG, right? Because like you gain level up, you just have a new skill, you can intrinsically do a better thing, right? So Travis, for example, like if you're gold rank and you have the reincarnation power, right, you can suddenly do like kamikaze attacks that you couldn't do on silver rank, right? So my last point to this, and I kind of want to throw this into the room and see where it goes, is shouldn't lit RPGs intrinsically have the system be involved in the end of the narrative? Isn't that what people expect?
Ooh, it depends on a narrative. It depends on how. It depends on the scale of your narrative. If your narrative is something really simple, like low key, the goal of the main character is to do this thing or get this job or help this person with like a sickness or something, or like I want to help my village or I want to stop the big bad. You don't necessarily need to have like an endpoint to the system for that, right? Like, you don't need to be God to stop a bad person from doing a bad thing, you know. Full Metal is a good example.
Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. The ending of that is an explicit rejection. Without spoiling too much, it's the ending of that is not based in the magic. The ending of that is very much based in character, in humanity, and you know. So
they basically reject the system at the end. And they're like, no,
exactly. And I would posit that like this is a good quote unquote lit RPG, because in the end it's about the conflict we talked about. It's like man versus man, man versus nature, and that is like man versus system, right? If you're looking at, for example, Edge Cases, one of the Silver Linings books, that is like people versus system, because the system is breaking and everything is going to fuck because of it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an allegory.
Yeah, I think you can use things like in a few different ways. I've tackled this a few ways. Spormageddon, the main character is given access to the system explicitly to take apart the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, your goal from the beginning is to destroy industrialization. So that's like the main character's goal. So they're gaining power for the sake of destroying non-magical systems and like taking them apart. And then like stuff like Straight Cash Strut, like there's a system in that, but the system is like the end goal of that system is to defend people.
Yeah.
So like even if you've reached like the really high levels of power, there's always more problems that you can solve.
Yeah.
So like I don't think your system necessarily needs an end goal for the system itself. Your story definitely should aim towards one.
Yeah.
But not necessarily your system.
Yeah. I think the system's involvement very much comes down to the origin of it. So in a lot of lit RPGs, the system is just more rules for how the world works, like gravity. You know, thermodynamics. So in those, you don't really need to have the system be integral to your conclusion. But if you compare it to something like, say, Dungeon Crawler Carl, where the system is
antagonistic,
and it's the system of oppression that he's determined to rip down, then that's something where you want the system to be more integral to the thing. So a conclusion might either be trying to bring down the system or to prevent an antagonist from bringing it down.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it's if you're breaking it down like to the basic root of it, it's again the question of like preserving the status quo versus disrupting the status quo, right? What's your main character's goal? Like either like destroy a system that they perceive as unjust, and this is like true for all stories, or preserving a system that they did like see as just, like yeah. Sveikat Strut, very much the latter. Dungeon Crawler Carl, very much the former.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's all about theme. Hmm. I mean, because if you're using your system as an analogy for another system that's maybe not ideal. As a, you know, so capitalism, then that's really, you know, that's the core theme of your story, and you're using it as such.
Mm. Yeah, sure. Exactly. I mean,
Shirt, you're really wanting me. Shirt is really making me want to write a socialist progression fantasy or lit RPG called Seeds as a Means of Progression. Right now.
Oh, John, you have to do this.
Like, oh, God. Like, oh, yeah. No, that's got my
God.
Firing already. I love that.
Yeah, image. Like, this is good. This is good. Let's go. Let's fucking go.
I mean, all my shit's basically socialist as hell, anyways. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, like you could have like the ghost of communism haunting people. Like, it's going to be so good. Oh, my God. It could be so good.
I mean, Communist Manifesto is basically progression fantasy already. So,
I have the short story that I've written for one of my writing classes, and it's called Formel 818, and it's basically it's set in the German Democratic Republic, so the GDR, before like shortly before the wall falls, and basically they have all these like. Various serums that they inject their agents with in order to better spy on the people, right? And this one guy has Formula 112, this is the main character, and he can see through stuff like in a TV, right? So everything is like analogous to like technology. So one guy can like listen to people like from another room as though it's through radio, right? And then like they've just started discovering this new formula, which is digital and kind of like disrupting everything. And that kind of like ties into all these entire things. And I think you could totally lit RPG that, and you could make a communist lit RPG out of it. That would be fun.
Honestly,
there's sell well at all.
There's a lot of room for systems in lit RPG that are analogous to other real world things that haven't been explored yet. Like you just mentioned, like digital and analog. I would love to see a lit RPG where the main crux of the system is that the system is changing from like an analog system, which functions with like maybe stats based. It's like a bit more like hard coded to like a more digital system. And
you might
maybe
enjoy
people are, you know, pushing towards one or the other. And like they have a choice in the system that they use in their lit RPG. And you kind of have a conflict from that. Like standpoint of like, oh, well, this one is better, that one is better, and make it analogous to like the progression of technology and whatever. You can use lit RPG systems as an analogy for a lot of things, I think, and it's something that's slept on quite a bit because it is complicated and it's not necessarily going to be the most fun thing to read when people are looking for big guy punch person face, you know.
Right. Last question. What is the most important part of the system?
So I have an answer with a capital A.
Okay.
I wish I could pronounce capital letters, but I can't. All right. So a while back I did like, I taught this like online class for a short story magazine about designing complex magic systems. Kind of one of the things in there is it's what I called the core mechanic paradigm, right? And basically this is what is the engine driving your magic, right? The class, and I pulled up my notes just now, but so the classic one is the cost plus action equals result, right? You pay some cost for the magic, you take some action and you get a magical effect. So in my series, it's like you create a spell, you know, you envision a spell form in your mind's eye, you put the mana in there, you get a spell effect, right? And this is kind of the classic thing, and you see it again and again and again. You, maybe it's your committing human sacrifice to get some magical effect, doing your chores.
As you do,
Yeah. Right. And this one, you know, or, you know, in Wheel of Time, right, you are drawing the magic in, using it, exhaust you. So, right. So this is the classic paradigm. But there's other paradigms you can use. In my book, The Rack, which I mentioned before, the magic essentially just lets you see into another magical realm, right?
Without a cost, necessarily. Well, except for, I think.
Yeah, it's not that simple formula. Instead, it's the whole thing's a new sense. Or in the Earthsea books, the true name system, knowledge becomes literally power. To know something is to change it, right? It's a Taoist magic system, right? Or you have. Haven't you ever read the Foundry Side trilogy?
I have it over here, up there, by Robert Jackson Bennett.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good. But so in this, there's no cost to the magic. The magic is basically like programming. You change the laws of physics or chemistry or whatever by doing the programming. And the downsides to it are if you fuck up, it's going to kill you or cause a huge explosion, do something absolutely terrible, right? But it's not a cost plus effect, right? It's a mechanics
risk reward, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's so many different potential paradigms you can, you know, these core mechanic paradigms that you can put at the heart of your magic system. But it's basically how, you know, when events enter into the lens of the magic, how does it change the shape of the story after the magic is done? Sorry for the long rant.
Part, yeah. No. Like that's what we invited you here for. So I don't have to rant as long.
Yeah, no, I agree that, yeah, the core framework, I guess if you boil it down to the point where's the bit where you aren't willing, you know, the core framework to the stage where you're not willing to break those rules.
I'm going to go in another direction here.
Yeah.
Because I think the most important part of the system that is cool as hell.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can have, like, a really complex system that's cool, but you can have, like, a really simple system, which is just, like, yeah, it's just, you can fireballs, and it's awesome. And as long as the system is, like, badass or, like, fun to read, I think that's the most important part. I think the complexity and everything else we add to it can enhance that by like making it like, oh, you're casting fireball, but you have to cut off a finger to do it. Oh, it's so cool. That can be even cooler. It can improve things, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
I'm totally starting off by having
something that's just really awesome and then work on your rules and everything else. Like you mentioned Full Metal Alchemist earlier. Yeah. That system is so cool. You know, touching hands together, they're doing things, or like writing formulas on the ground, and it's doing like cool effects and everything. And it's like, it's got rules and it's got chemistry and it's got like all sorts of complex things working into it. And it's like, but at the end of the day,
by punching people.
At the end of the day, it's really cool looking though. And that's it's visually enticing. And like, if you were to read a story that has that magic system in it, it just, yeah, that just feels cool and like, oh, there's explosions and there's like lots of actions and everything. But it can also be very subtle and complex. So I think that's the most important part. It has to be cool.
I think that's right. I think, the most important part is it has to make the story better, like more entertaining, more exciting. Like it has to add rather than be something to get through.
Yeah.
To actually get to the story.
And to make it cool, you might want it to be complex, which that's totally fair. I am rewriting a story that I wrote a while ago. And what I'm doing right now while writing it is I'm just removing all the lit RPG segments. Because I realized about 3/4 of the way through that they were unnecessary for the story. The magic system in that story, Heart of Darkness, is one of the coolest I've ever written, I think. It just works really well, but it didn't need levels and skill stats and all this, that felt like it was like interfering with the I'm going to cast giant fire aspect of it. And it was like, this is not adding to the system's interestingness. Yeah. It's just a level of complexity that I have to explain every time. And it's not improving the story necessarily.
It feels weird to say as a lit RPG author, but I think if you can actually take out like as much of the system as you can, then you should. Like you should have exactly as much as you require to do what you need and to be awesome.
Yeah, it's something it took me a long time to realize it, but if you can simplify your system as much as possible while still keeping it
keeping rule the based
and functional and fun.
Yeah.
But don't overcomplicate it.
As the author of Extremely Complex Magic Systems, I endorse your message.
One example
of someone who does complex right, just someone who the story actually needs the complexity, the story needs just a crazy magic, it's Delve.
Delve is like a go-to example.
Yeah.
If you like math, you might like this.
The old police procedural numbers with the 3 for the E. That Delve is the numbers of lit RPG.
Nice. I mean, so for me, what you said, right, Raven? I've started out with this huge idea of like how I'm going to make the system because I really want to make a crunchy system for band. It doesn't work at all. The story doesn't need it, right?
Yeah,
I have all these XP numbers, and I'm just gonna like go through them. And I'm gonna delete them all, and I'm gonna be using the old trick that I first read in was it Book of the Dead? I think it's book like the new rhinos. I think it was Book of the Dead, right? Where it's just like you gain experience in being more human. Full stop. Right. So, like, you have interacted with other humans. Now you are a better human than before. I need that, right? I don't need to like have any numbers in this. I need to have like you got better, and then maybe I can even like put stats in, but never have a stat sheet, right? Because in the end, the stat sheets they don't really do much in that story.
They're really good. Stat sheets are really good if you have a writing quota that you have to meet. Like I have to write like 2 chapters a week, and you're like, shit, I don't have time to do all this. I'm just going to make a stat sheet chapter. It's going to be like 80% copy pasted from the last one. A couple of numbers are going to go up, and you just saved yourself like 4 or 5 hours of writing time. You can play video games instead.
I thought this is you doing this to like torture the audiobook readers.
Oh right, yeah, that is something.
It is rough on the audiobook readers. Yeah.
Yeah. He says sneakily staring at his drink.
I don't think I've done like.
My that is describe a new location. I can just go on autopilot when describing locations. No. I love describing locations.
Oh yeah, that's great. You just arrive at a new place. You're like, I'm going to spend like a whole chapter just. Telling please. You about this place. I love going on rants.
Write mine, please. I can write dialogue for you, please.
This grass is going to be sun dappled as balls. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so great.
Sun dappled. You want 2 words for that one, not one, because you know, that's
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I love going on these like world building tangents where they're a lot of fun, but it's like, hey, I'm going to go for like a chapter and a half here about the economic repercussions of this magic system.
I have deleted so many pages where I'm just going, well, here's a good, you know, this is a perfect segue into this aspect of the well-being. Drunk, 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 drunk. Wow, that's 2 pages that 100% derailed my pacing. Delete.
Oh, God. Oppositely, you can do this as a character written driver, as a character driven writer too, right? You're like, oh, how about we explore this one time? My main character felt really, really bad about that one time in high school, which is like 200 years ago, and like I wrote, it's like, Max, what are you doing? Like, you're making the espresso depresso story again. Just don't do that. But I think I have like one more question we need to ask. It is the Shami Stovall question. If you've seen the comics, they're really, really cute. She's done like cutie comics on Facebook. And that is creamy or crunchy?
Ooh, creamy.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
I think you should apply the level that's necessary to the story that you're telling.
Yeah, wow. that's the correct answer.
What's your personal take?
But it's the correct boring answer. Yeah, that's absolutely the right one.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'll lean more towards crunch, like simple crunch. But yeah, I mean, it comes down to what you're looking for. Because like the harder and crunchy you go, the more you can sort of play around with what you've got and sort of delve into the systems. And I think that's largely where I fall. But I also definitely see the appeal of something that's a lot softer, and it lets you bring the like a real sense of sort of mystery and wonder back into your magic. That you can still have that when things are really crunchy, but it's also, you know, the more rules you have and understand, then the more you can play around with that. Whereas, you know, that sort of sense of exploration and, you know, a vast unknown world, that magic where you don't know all the rules.
So my favorite morning treat is something that Americans and just don't have. Like, we have like these very, very crunchy like bread rolls here in Germany. We call them little bread, Brötchen, right? And they're very, very crunchy. And they're like crunchy on the outside and very, very soft on the inside. It's like whole wheat, nothing else. But I love these with a little bit of like Nutella or whatever, right? So this is exactly the level I want. I want soft at the top and then crunchy at the bottom. This is what I want. Because, for example, in band, it's super important that the system actually makes sense. It has very, very strict rules. But I don't necessarily want the reader to know this until the very end. And I was like, wait, this makes so much sense. Thanks. That's cool. John.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
What does a little bit of Nutella mean? I don't understand that.
It's where you get one of those really, really big jars and you only
take a portion of the jar.
Weird.
My issue is like you eat one and you have to get a new Nutella and then like Travis is dying. Like he's debating pressing that exit button right now. I can see it. All right, I caught you guys. Anyway, this has been fun. It's been 1.5 hours. Well, we should probably end it here. So this has been long enough. Oh wait, we can't. We have to do the questions for the next round, which is the fun part where we throw things over the fence. You all have access to the whiteboard, right?
Oh, God.
Max will suffice. And now give me your best questions that you have about... Just see.
Yeah, what's the topic?
Get this right? Yeah, just get the topic. We're doing this. One second. Right. Writing web serials and Patreon retention, all that kind of stuff. So specifically stuff about like how to write web serials. Let's just all take like a minute or two and then think about it real quick. All right. Cool. After this quick time jump, we are now at the point where we have written a lot of questions and yeah. If you want to vote on these, you can join my Patreon and have a quick vote. There's also a lot of bonus material. So I think for every podcast I did, there's like at least an hour of bonus material on there. So
wait, just to be clear, you're saying bonus, not bones, right? You don't have a whole bunch of stuff on your Patreon about the TV show Bones. That would be odd.
It'd be a little
or what about, you know, osteology, just bone science, just maybe some paleontology?
No, no, strictly the TV show Bones. If it's not about David Boreanaz, I don't want to hear it.
I think some of you might think that I deserve this. No one deserves that. Okay. This has been a Crit RPG podcast. A podcast where apparently it's okay to bully the host.
Yes, it is. It's so
we can. I am heartbroken. And with me today were Raven's Dagger, John Beers, and Shardaloon. All right. Any last words before we sign off? Oh, right. Yeah. Chill your stories. Like, oh. Yeah, I'm always in there for like helping small indie authors get to know. Yeah. This is like, yeah.
How long do we have?
Oh. Again, Raven. One of your 25 stories.
Ah, I'm going to need a dice somewhere.
Like, where's my 25 set of dice? giant chonker like rolls a D100. All right, so go ahead, you started. Show one, two.
Complicated love life of evil antagonists is going really well recently. That's a fun one. Nice. It's a comedy-ish thing. Mm-hmm. No, it's a very fun story. Overpowered main character trying to figure out romance. If you're not into romance, you might enjoy it anyway. It leans much heavier on the comedy side of things.
There are clowns
in space. Space clowns. They're pretty space cool, clowns. Actually.
That's insane.
It's very over the top. If you're a fan of Snow Crash, it's written in that same type of style. So it's very, very peculiar way of being written. But I think it's doing pretty well. It's very fun to write.
I think they would call it like it's The Expanse meets Warhammer meets typical Raven's Dagger.
You know what? I think that fits. It's The Expanse meets Warhammer 40K meets a rom-com. How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which is super cool.
It's actually very fun. Like for as a premise, it's just a blast to write. Because I get to do like cool world building on like space stations and like different factions in space that are weird and exploring different groups and stuff like that. But I also get a lot of fun with like the system and how that works and like how the overpowered main character became overpowered and like how they're dealing with like mundane problems while trying not to destroy everything. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of overpowered main characters, Travis, you want to go next?
Yeah, I guess I've got the same problem as Ravens, where I need to figure out which story I'm going to make. Where's my D1? I write He Who Fights With Monsters. Book 11 is coming out July 23rd.
11.
Yeah, 11.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I write so much compared to some people.
Because you aren't like releasing like book 8 of Stray Cat Strut.
Yeah, but I don't have any that have gotten to 11. That's a lot.
You have gotten 11 that you've gotten to 8.
Well, that doesn't count. It's not the same.
But book 11, it's fine. It's fun. You know, somehow still going. It always ends up taking way more than I think it will. But yeah, 11 and going strong on July 23rd. So if you have read the first 10, or listen to them, then please get it. If not, I would highly recommend starting earlier in the series.
At 11 might be a little bit rough.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for book 11 because I want to get to 10 and 11 at the same time.
Yeah, that is 11, not one twice, making you extra likely to read it first.
Great. Okay, John.
I'm currently in between series. I just finished my Wizard School progression fantasy series, Mage Errant. And I'm currently hard at work on More Gods Than Stars, which is a sword and sorcery and socialism progression fantasy trilogy set on the habitable moon of a gas giant. with a mimic-based ecosystem and a pseudo-medieval megastructure arcology that's spreading uncontrollably across the continent like a cancer. And the first book's going to be The City That Would Eat the World. I'm hoping to have the first book out this year.
Those were a lot of adjectives and nouns.
That sounds pretty great, actually.
It fucking does, yeah. Like that's how you pitch a book, yeah, man, yeah.
Yeah, I said the title, and it's like, you know, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone can top that. So yeah, I am working full time. Please save me. I write two novels very slowly right now, unfortunately. One of them is called Torchbearer, and it's about grief, loss, PTSD, and also numbers going up. And also has a female main character, so you might have not heard of it. Thank you very much for being here, and I hope you enjoyed this. So I certainly did. And yeah, thank you very much for listening and or watching, and I will see you next time.